This is making me very happy. For this episode of Reasons to be Joyful, somebody that brought me such joy when I watched on telly, and then whose mum made my life, and all will be explained, Ella Henderson. You're just lovely.
Oh, don't say that because you are.
No, you really are.
And we share the same name.
Oh, she's giving it away. Okay, so we met before, and then we saw each other at a Well Child Award, and we were backstage, and your mum came up, and she was so lovely, and she said, I need to tell you something. there's a fly. There's a fly flying around. It's getting excited as well. You share the same name as my daughter. I said, no, my name is not Ella. She went, no, but she shares your name. So I got so confused. I went, my name. She said, Gabriella. And I said, my name is not Gabriella. It's just Gabby. She went, what? And then she told me, which blew my mind. I can't say it because before I scream, because my girls think it's hysterical. Who were you named after?
So I found that out that day as well, that my mum named me after you, Gabby Roslin.
Yes, oh my God.
And what was it that she said she used to watch when I was in her tummy?
So it couldn't have been. How old are you that now?
I was born in 96.
Right. So it would have been the Big Breakfast. Big Breakfast, and I was doing something called Whatever You Want and all sorts of things.
Oh, she knows it all.
But it was, she looked and I just went, what are you talking about? She said, yes, I named her after you.
So you're not even Gabriella. No. But I'm named after you.
But what's so funny is I end up with Gabby, you're Ella, and somehow we've merged together.
I know, isn't that funny?
But I don't know if you remember, I also cried because nobody ever said that to me before.
Aww.
I named my daughter after you.
But you're one of those humans, Gabby, where like when you see you on the TV or on the radio, wherever you see you presenting, my mum adores you. And I'm so close to my mum, so naturally I've grown up to adore you.
Oh, that's I have,
and you always radiate such kind energy.
Well, that's what you do. That's why when she said that, I was completely overwhelmed and I did cry. But also, I went back that night after the awards and I was screaming. And I was like, oh, girls. And I think my younger one was in bed. I mean, you got to wake up. Ella Henderson's named after me. And there was, no,
your
name's
your
not Ella. So now they're 17 and 23.
Oh, wow.
So they absolutely, like, they're
so
exactly,
yeah, yeah, we're all okay. Wow.
Exactly your fan
base. What did they think when you told them?
They kept saying, no, mum, no, her name's Ella. I mean, no, her name's Gabriella. Yeah.
And nobody, well, not a lot of people know that my name is Gabriella on the bus.
Did anybody ever call you Gabby?
Yes, in school I was a Gabby.
There we go.
In school. And it's so weird because sometimes if I'm out and about and if I've heard it before and someone called me Gabby and I'm like, oh, it's someone I know from like way back when before anything. And it's bizarre because I was Gabriella and then, but growing up, I'm the youngest of four and my brothers could never say my name, so they called me Ella. So at home I was
Ella. Oh,
that's
where it came from.
Yeah, and then in school, I naturally just was called Gabby. And then it's weird, when I went and did that X Factor audition at 16, it was up to me. I could have easily put Gabriella, Gabby or Ella and I just went with Ella.
But it
whatever
works.
I'd have written that day is what my name would have been today.
So what does your fiancé call you?
Ella.
So everyone calls
you... Or a lot of other names, but we won't say on the podcast.
That's not for sharing. That's oversharing. No. Okay, so you mentioned X Factor. 16. You were 16. Your voice... We watched it religiously. Your voice, it still does blow our minds. But you were 16.
Yeah, I know.
Isn't that weird now if you think about it?
I was talking about it only in a recent therapy session I was having of I don't think I quite grasped how young I was when I did it. If you actually think about it, because I've got nephews now that are, the eldest is 18 and 16. I'm really close to my sister. They're her two boys. And I could never imagine them doing something like that. Especially, I think it's different now, though, because we have social media that's such at the forefront of everything,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And really, Instagram only just started when I did that. And you had Twitter and stuff. But yeah, 16 years old is very, very young. I think I now realise that I'm not I'm not old at bloody 28, but I definitely look back now and I think I was very young when I did that. And
were you quite streetwise or were you just... Was there a nice naivety? Because that's how
yes
it came
and
across.
No. I would say I was streetwise in the sense of I've been brought up well and very like with northern morals and very just like grounded and keep your feet on the ground vibes. But in the same token, I'd never really gone a lot out. Like I went to a boarding school because I got a scholarship to go to like a performing arts school when I was 11. So I went there and that taught me a lot and I kind of learned the ropes of being away from home. But apart from that, no, like I'm the youngest of four. So I've always been like the baby or the one that's got away with everything. And, you know, I think my mum really actually struggled with me even going to boarding school, let alone go on like that show. She was like, so, you know, wanted me like tucked in.
But
with
she's
her
so
and,
proud of you.
Oh gosh.
I mean, her, she's so proud. Her face, when she's holding you backstage and so proud.
I've never seen her that excited when she there's two times in my life I've seen my mum so excited where she's just gone on and on and on about it for days. One was meeting Donny Osmond because that was like her childhood crush and she I've never seen her go purple. She went purple. It was so, I was saying, Mum, I've got someone to
was
come and meet
breathing?
You. Well, I brought him in. It was backstage at, I think it was the NTA Awards. And I was only 16 then. I was performing on it when I came off the X Factor.
It's mad, isn't it?
And he was in the corridors. And I just thought, I've never really done this before because I was so young. But I grabbed him and I just went, Donny, I said, I'm so, so sorry to interrupt you, but I have to bring you to my dressing room. You, like, my mum will just die. She loves you. And I brought him in and she just didn't know what to do with herself.
And she went purple.
Oh, yeah, no. She ended up just crumbling and just, like, absolutely fangirled. And my dad was there as well. It was so funny. But she was sat there and she literally just said to his face, like, I love you.
Oh!
That time is the time I've seen her. And meeting you.
Oh, no, I thought you were saying she was excited about you performing.
No, no. No, there's monumental moments in my career, Gabby, and one of them's meeting Donny Osmond with her and then one's meeting you. No, it is because I think you get to do so many wild different things in this career, but actually, I think what my mum loves is when she comes across real people in this industry and she gets to see a little piece of that. And I think, do you know what I mean? Like,
You're so lovely and your mum's so lovely. But all I meant is like when she was hugging you before you went on, there was just so much pride. And it must be quite extraordinary for a parent because you were, I hate the phrase, I'm going to use it, but catapulted into the stratosphere. Suddenly on it was the biggest show at the time. You were 16 years old and everybody didn't understand why you... I love that you and James Arthur have then since worked together and all of that. But everyone, you know, you were one team or the other at home.
Yeah.
And it was like, what? No! That voice! She's so lovely! And the way you behaved on it, you were just polite and lovely and...
What's happened?
No. Yeah, she's foul.
I don't know.
Rude.
Yeah, I think...
But it's 12 years, which actually...
It's crazy.
Is... A lot has happened in those 12 years. And I know you took some time out, which is really good as well.
Yeah.
I'm actually, nothing to do with me, I'm really pleased you did because the whirlwind of that craziness must have... Did you ever feel that you were, like, you just couldn't keep
up? Yeah, I think this is what I think I'm working through at the moment is the idea of... There's one thing is, like... Well, look, I'm a singer, aren't I? And I'm an artist, so... there is no standard way of this career, the path, though. As you know, everyone has their own version of events, how they come into it. But how I thought in my head, if this ever would have happened with me, would have been finish college, go do my A-levels, rent a flat with some friends, work like three different jobs, trying to write music at the same time and trying to get signed as a songwriter to write for artists and eventually be in the room with other artists, learn the ropes and then
you
hopefully...
You had it all planned at such a young age.
Yeah. So for it to happen the way it did, nothing really prepares you for what I do find it the strangest part of it. And I don't think I've really understood this until like quite recently is nobody knowing you at all, apart from the people that really love and care about you unconditionally in your life. And then waking up one day and everybody knowing you and having an opinion of you. And that's quite, I look back now and I'm like, I was 16 and a baby. How did I even do that? And it's a lot. And I think, and also nobody taught you, or there was no discussion of mental health back then or anything like that. And I guess there's nothing that really can teach you what to deal with when that's taken away.
You can't actually be taught those things, can you?
No. And I think that's where I'm just really grateful how supportive my family are, and especially my parents. And, you know, my siblings, my best friends. I can count my friends on one hand. They've been there from absolutely day dot. And yeah, I mean,
those are the ones that stand. The ones that stand by you.
Yeah.
And you're there's so much. You know, there is a lot of fakery in the entertainment business. It's all, oh, how are you? And then they kiss you hello and they're actually looking over their shoulder to see
the
who
next
they can.
Person.
Yeah, yeah, all of that. You can keep those people. You really can.
Yeah.
But it was enormous and your songs were everywhere.
Mm.
And it's really funny that I'm even saying that because it was your songs, but that was you that was everywhere as well as this young girl. And then taking that time away, was it a decision of yours?
I was fortunate enough, I think, the way I came off X Factor. I know a lot of people, when I bump into people in the supermarket or wherever I am, they're like, oh, you should have won. I'm like, well, actually, I think me coming off the way I did was one of the best things that happened to me, because I don't think just shooting straight away, having to go straight into doing a single would have been the right thing for a 16-year-old looking back. I had like 2 years to actually do a little bit of artist development and go into the recording studio, write, and I was in the room with like my dream producers. It was just unbelievable at that age, and getting to create and write music and learn from the best. And that's how like it all started. But I think the music industry was very different then as well to what it is now. I think Ghost was the last number one before streaming was introduced. So like music's obviously...
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's what it is, because after that, it's changed so dramatically. I can remember like... It came out and that night I saw it on as like sat at number one on iTunes and I was just waiting for it to just fall and it never did. And I sat with my mum and I think we just cried for ages.
Oh, of course.
I just couldn't believe it. Was it of all the places, was it GAY Heaven?
Couldn't be anywhere better.
And that's where I'll never forget, I did a rendition of Believe. It wasn't really planned, but I was like, do you know what? Bugger it. I'm just going to do a version of Cher's Believe. And everybody loved it and we all sang it word for word. And yeah, it was just very surreal. And then having like a number one album at that age. And then this is when I was like 18, this was happening. And then you travel the world and do all these amazing things. But I think at the time you look back on it and part of it's a blur. And then part of it, I wish I could go back and redo it and enjoy it more for what it was, because I think I was just such an anxious, like underneath it all. I coped with it so well, but I think underneath it all, I think I was really anxious. And I guess a lot of hotel rooms where you just like sat there ordering room service and like, yeah, I've got my amazing management that have been with me since day one as well, that was with me. And like, we've got so many funny stories from along the way, but I've got to say, like, I think after that chapter kind of happened, I say chapter in the first album was even called Chapter One.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I was 18, right? So I almost felt jealous and resentful of my friends at uni going out and
having normal things.
Yeah. And I would come back to London, which never really felt like home because I'm originally from up north. And then I had this flat that I was renting. There was nothing in it. And it was just like soulless. And I was like, well, I don't like this flat. I don't like where I live. I don't even have a sofa. I don't have like everything just felt a bit. So I was like, I just need to live for a little while and figure out who I am. And
that's
just
such
be an
a mature thing to do.
I mean, yes and no, because
because there's not many 18-year-olds that would say that. I just want it all. I want it all because.
But I kind of did at first. I did, and I tried to write album two, but it just wasn't working. It wasn't happening, and my label and I decided to part ways. There was a lot of changes in the company anyway. Everyone that was part of my first record had left, and they were the people that I signed to, and they believed in me, and I believed in them, and we had this amazing relationship. And then I got handed into the hands of someone that didn't really see the same vision as me. So I was like, well, what's the point? Because if we don't see the same end result, we're never going to get there.
Everything happens for real. I know people 100%. Always say that's so trite, but I really truly believe it.
Yeah.
Like
no,
you said,
it's true.
Everyone says, oh, I wish you'd won, but actually you didn't. And it's because of that step that you were supposed to do and the next bit and the next bit and the next bit.
But I had no idea what was next. I mean, I knew I still wanted to obviously do music, but I think the scariest thing was before signing my record deal at 16, I'd never done a paper round, Gabby. So I honestly thought...
Are you doing a paper round now, though? I'm so pleased. You've never done one before, but now you're very happy.
I'd never done a normal job, so I was just, I was preparing myself for the worst in my mind, which was you'll never get another record deal again, because that could have happened. And it doesn't mean I'm going to get signed again.
But it wouldn't because of your voice. but that's just me saying that now. If it's easy, honestly, you wouldn't because you're a star.
It's so funny though, if
you'd
have seen me at that time, you'd have thought so not maybe not have seen necessarily my talent, but you definitely would have thought, oh wow, like she's really lost, and how do we help her navigate that? Because I really was lost, like,
of course.
And that's when I think for the first time I started to experience like anxiety and panic, and I'd never experienced it before. And I've opened up very much warmly about the whole conversation of this over the last couple of years.
It's just so good that you have. I mean, there's many of you have.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to name them all because we know who they are, but, you know, Robbie talks about it so eloquently. I've known Rob since he was 15. You know, other people, but some of the Little Mixers, all of them, they all talk openly about it. And the more we talk about all of these issues, the more it's going to help other people and help yourself. Yeah. And it's got to be a double whammy.
I totally agree.
You know, the fact it's helping you to talk about it, and it's helping that other young boy, that other young girl, that older woman who's had anxiety, whatever age, somebody's actually using the words.
Yeah.
Somebody's saying, I'm shy, I'm awkward, I feel anxious, I'm scared to get out of the car. They're going, oh, that's me.
Yeah. And it's weird. I think it took an interview for me to, I think I saw... Who was it? I think it might have even been one of the Little Mix girls at one point. I think it might have, one of them was talking about how at one point they didn't want to leave the house. I was like, oh, I know what that, I've had that. But I thought I was crazy. And it's not because I don't want to leave the house because I don't want to get photographed someone. I'm talking about not leaving the house because you're just scared to.
You're scared? Yeah.
It's nothing to do with what I do. Like, I could have worked in Tesco and felt that way. I think it was just a stage in my life where I didn't know where I was going, didn't know how to navigate it, didn't know if I was going to get signed again, and didn't really know what to do with myself. And I just got my head down a little bit and went and started. I basically hit everyone up that I wrote a lot of my first album with, and that was a really interesting process to see who replied back as an unsigned female artist and who didn't.
Don't name them.
But yeah,
did some of them
wrong.
Do?
Some did and some didn't. And the ones that did are still in my life today, and we still write and record together.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah, and we did. We would go in and write, and then that's when I started writing. So then I'd created this kind of small body of work. And then what happened was I was in a studio one day, and next door was the Rudimental Boys, and somehow they'd overheard some of my music, and they came in, they was like, this is great. And they had never even seen me on the X Factor. They just knew of me through Ghost and my music, which was...
How lovely.
Yeah, which was a really interesting...
That's quite liberating.
Yeah, it was for me, because I think, you know, coming from something like a talent show, sometimes you feel like you just got to constantly, you have it in the back of your mind, even if no one's saying it, you're thinking it, if you've got to try and break this mold of what that means. But, I think for me to be just judged solely for like my music, and there it was on the table, and they just started having a chat with me, and then their manager came in, they just started saying like, look, we've got our own record label now, like, what's the thoughts? And I was like, oh gosh, like, you're like, yeah, let's speak to my manager, but like, it sounds really exciting. And when I wrote down labels at the time of where I wanted to go, it was Atlantic Records. And as soon as I found out that their label was part of Atlantic, I was so excited, because I was like,
give me goosebumps.
Yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, like, is this it? Are all the stars aligning? Is this going to be it? And they really took me under their wing though. I'd not got up on stage for about, I want to say 18 months, 2 years, which when you constantly have done that day in,
that's
day
a long
out
time.
And you stop, it feels like forever, and you almost feel like you don't even know what to do. It's
you don't know if you can
like
still
a fish
do
out
it.
Of water, basically.
Yeah.
Like,
can I do it? Yeah.
And I think the way I used to perform as well, I always used to wear a black jumpsuit, all done up, a pair of heels, and stand behind a mic stand, right? That was my show for years. And then I went to a Rudimental rehearsal, and I just saw the chaos. I saw this 15-piece band that was like all live musicians. I mean, I had live musicians, but it was a 4-piece and some singers. This was like, you know, there's a brass section, then there's the singers. And the idea was that I was going to go on tour with them as one of the singers that pops up. And I was like, this is amazing. I'm not named. There's no pressure. I'm here as part of Rudimental, and it's a family. And it did. It felt like this really dysfunctional family. And we went on the road, and I can remember the first night I got on stage, I was so nervous. And one of the girls, and actually Anne-Marie did the kind of same route as me of doing this kind of like going on tour with the Rudimental Boys and coming through that way. And I just learned so much. I went from being behind that mic stand to then wearing trainers on stage, whatever I wanted to wear,
feeling
doing
like
my
you.
Own hair and makeup, yeah. however I wanted to yeah. do it, running around the stage. Literally, I would come off dripping with sweat and I'd feel like, oh my God, that's what living feels like. Like, it was like a completely different feeling to any of my other gigs or anything I'd ever done, even though of having a lot of success. Like, it almost felt like this big like epiphany moment for me. And I can remember one night it was in Dublin. It was the first night of the show and it was time for me to come forward and sing like full on. It was called Free. It's their tune with Emily Sandé, which is one of my favourite songs they do. And I could see some of the people in the audience like, is that her? And then you could kind of see them in the crowd and I was like, oh, like it made me a bit nervous. And then I started doing it at the end and it was at the end of the song that Leon from the band, and he said, for all of you, I can hear the whispers in the room. Yes, this is incredible. And Ella Henderson, and I can remember just the whole room stood up and applauded me because I'd gone through so much anxiety and I started crying on stage. And I was just like, oh, wow, like this is like a real new beginning for me. And it was. And I honestly, even today, I don't even know if those boys know how like fundamental that tour itself was for me. Even going on, it's the first time I'd gone on a proper tour bus because all of my stuff was, oh, we're flying here and flying there, so we've got to use hotels. It wasn't like, do you know what I mean? This felt real and proper. This is how I'd imagined going on the road.
The music business
to
be, yes.
So much fun. And it was just a belly laugh and a joy the whole way doing that. And then obviously signed with them. And then it was very much like I have complete artistic freedom to write whatever I want to write. And I had them backing me along with the support of the record label itself and with the team that I got put with within Atlantic. So, yeah, and that's how it all kind of began with the next chapter.
And you feel you're in a really happy space. Do you feel less anxious? Do you still get anxiety?
Yeah, I had it the other night. And it comes on in waves, and sometimes it comes on and you don't even know why or how, and come on, there must be something subconsciously going on in me, but you can't figure out in that moment. But what I've learned to say to myself is that I don't have anxiety. You can't buy anxiety
and you can't
own it. It's just something that passes through you. And when I think of it like that, I'm like, okay, it's going to pass through me and it's going to disappear in a minute, or it might take an hour, but it is going to pass through.
What
it's
very
just
mature
the moment.
It's very,
no, I'm not.
It's no, but so, that is yeah, but a very mature attitude.
But it took me 5 years to get to this place of learning that. I didn't, you know, for 2 years, I think I thought I was having a heart attack or something severe.
Oh, no, but lots of people do. I mean, listen, I talk very openly about having excruciating shyness.
Yes.
And people go, well, you're on the telly all the time, you do all the... No, I have such shyness. And I've talked about it on this podcast a lot because I want more people to talk about shyness. But where I can't go to a party sometimes. And it will just
That's like
hit me
though.
And I'll be outside and I will look at my husband and go, I actually can't go in. And he'll go, yeah, you can. No, you don't understand. I cannot go in. And people don't get it. But I know it's going to go.
Yeah.
But in that moment, it's there. And it's very real.
Yeah.
So your anxiety in that moment is very real. And you're right, it dissipates somewhere. Yeah. You go, oh, I'm okay.
And do you know what one of my favourite things ever that happens with like when you're within contact of strangers and stuff? You know when, so let's say you're out somewhere or you're at an event or you're at a party, someone's clocked onto who you are, da, 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 and then this one person comes up and goes, I'm so sorry, I've not got a clue who you are. That's my favourite person.
That's the person that you talk to.
I end up standing and speaking to that person all night because they have no perception of who I am, what I've done, don't know me. They think I could be a baker from down the road. And I love that. And I'm like, please don't apologize. That to me is the most humbling comment anyone could have said tonight to me, because why should you know who I am? You don't know.
But also, the other thing to remember is what I always, and I say to people that I'm trying to help to get through that, I always say, just remember, everybody else in the room is feeling probably similar to you and thinking, I don't want to be, oh, that person's going to think this, that person's going to think that,
yeah,
I can't speak, what if I say something stupid? And so just you say hello to someone who you just see on their own, and then suddenly they're, oh, okay, okay. And it's about talking about all these things. And it's fantastic that you do. And all the people that you've helped. And I think, I feel through your music, especially now, I love Filthy Rich. We're going to get onto that in a minute. What's really weird, I'm going to have to tell you, that while you've been talking, it's playing like in a soundtrack in my head. Anyway, I'll start singing it in a minute. It'll be really embarrassing. But your music and all the interviews that you do and all the press that you do and everything, you talking about all these things and everything that you've gone through, everything you're going through, it just makes it far easier. The conversations have to happen.
Absolutely.
And they have to happen more often.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing.
In schools,
and as a creative, I get to write music. So I get to share a lot of my inner thoughts and what's actually going on with me through my art, which is like the most therapeutic thing ever. And yeah, like obviously along the way, I've had the toxic relationship. I've had things go on in my family life and in my personal life. And I've had, you know, my insecurities big time. I mean, my God, take away even like me in the limelight of what I do. Just like being a young woman in itself is like just difficult to navigate at times. Hormones and just all sorts going on as a female body here. So all of that to deal with. On top of it, like just like anyone, just trying to get up out the bed and be motivated. Okay, what am I doing this for? Because success means something else, something so different to each and every person. And I think like...
Good for you saying that.
Yeah, like, and I think I'm coming to realise...
Can't compare one person's success with another.
And also, do you think, you might not agree, but what success meant to me at 18 is so different to what it is now at 28. And that's 10 years difference. But it's bizarre. Like, when I sit down and speak about like...
So what was it then and what is it now?
Well, I think I didn't know the difference between values and goals at the age of 18. I always thought a goal was the end.
That's interesting.
But actually, goals are little things that veer off from your centre. Your centre, like, a value for me is like your compass. I mean, I know I'm northern, but it's north to me. Like, it's like, yeah. So my values are my family, my friends, safety. I like to feel safe. And I don't just mean... whether that be not just like financially or like I'm talking about like safe in myself of like, just do I feel safe right now in the company I'm in or where I'm at? And like, is it a safe environment?
That. It's a good
word.
You
know what I mean? Like there's times in life where sometimes I just haven't felt safe and it's not because I've been at a detriment or I'm about to, you know, something's about to happen to me. It's just, I can't quite put my finger on it and I haven't felt
that
comfortable.
That makes total sense. Totally get that.
And then goals would be, well, like having a number one or buying a car or like, do you know what I mean? Like those things more, I guess they're more in a sense, like maybe materialistic or things that just, this is what coming to really like Filthy Rich is about. It's about if I took all of that side of my life away and as long as I had my family and my friends, I know I'd be all right. But if you took them away and I had everything else and I had all my awards sat there on the piano and all of that, even with music still here, I would absolutely crumble and I would hate it. So I think there's been a huge growth spurt happening there in my life. And I suppose like nearly like touching my 30s now of like what that's kind of done to me. But also I think when lockdown happened and I was really bad with my anxiety, not because of COVID and lockdown, sorry to bring that awful word up, but I think I was already going through such a difficult time personally. Like I was having about 4 or 5 panic attacks a day and I couldn't get through a day and it was really, really bad. And I think one person completely misquoted me and put, because at that time I was sleeping in I went back home, stayed with my mum, and I think I slept in kicked my dad out the bed and I stayed in the bed for about four weeks straight. And somebody misquoted that saying I slept with my mum for 4 weeks straight, and I was like, no, that's not what happened.
Yes, trust me. That's the joy of a podcast. We're not editing this.
Exactly
as it was.
But I actually really laugh at it now, and I know that even Josh, when that happened, he was like, "Oh God, what's going to come
Your
out?"
Team of
my-? Whenever I do any interview or anything, he knows because I ramble and I'm northern and I'm so.
You
open.
Don't ramble. You don't ramble. Don't say that. But no, don't say that.
I won't.
Don't use
down.
That word.
No, I won't. But I'm quite open. Yeah. I just say what I think, and it is what it is. There's no. It's warts and all right with me, but. Point being, I've lost my train of thought.
No, you were saying about before, you went home because of the anxiety in lockdown and you were with your mum in bed for 4 weeks.
Yeah, and I was honestly contemplating...
With you two both sleeping for 4 weeks. Yeah.
I honestly was contemplating then about quitting the music industry and quitting music and just focusing on myself, and just finding inner peace again.
I think
happiness.
A lot of people, I know you were going through other stuff as well, mm-hmm. but I think that did cause a lot of people to feel that about
way.
Their lives.
Which is really, really reassuring.
A lot of
really
acts of friends of mine just yeah. suddenly went, okay, what is all this about?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was something really wholesome for me being obviously back in the house that I grew up in, back playing on the piano that I grew up playing on and taught myself to play, sitting with my mum outside the back door, having a cup of tea with her. And
lovely.
Making life more about others and not yourself really helped me because
That's
it made me realise there's more than just you
And that
in the
comes
world.
Back to your song at the moment.
Absolutely. But then even from lockdown... That's when all I wanted to do then with my music was kind of centered, I guess, around this podcast was I just want to make people smile. That was the only thing I wanted to do with my music because I felt so low and in a really dark place that I needed to do that for myself. And that's where all this dance era has come from, I think, in me. And I say that I think because it was never a plan. It was never like I'm going to start to do
like
loads
that.
Of this and this is where the way my career is going to go. No, not at all. We started throwing records out. I started writing more. I started sending songs off to producers and speeding them up and pitching it out to DJs and things. And it just kind of all started happening. And then I was collaborating more and I loved it. And I've loved and I still love it. I love meeting people, finding out what they want to write about and... You know, credits to so many artists that I've worked with. I think a lot of people think these DJs, oh, they stand and put an MP3 in. And actually, no, like Nathan Dore, whenever I've written any of the singles, I've done three with him now. And all three, he's been in the room and said fully, like, this is the concept. This is what I'm going through. Or this is what I really want to write about. Or this has happened to my friend. And that's where, you know, 0800 Heaven came from that. Like, it's such a beautiful, beautiful message about if you could say one last thing to somebody that you love. So everything kind of always has a story. And I love that with music. And I think I've definitely lent on not having to have the pressure fully on me. Maybe I've got this shyness thing as well, actually, of like, I've loved being able to like not have the burden just on me and the pressure on me for, you know, the single to do well. So it's been really nerve-wracking coming into this, doing this new record, because it's the first time in 2 years I've done something fully on my own.
It's really new sound.
It is.
You,
it
and
is.
I love it.
Oh,
and
good.
It feels really relevant. I think since meeting you, I feel like we're obviously connected. We're family. but it's really now. It's and the words you sit down. I love it because I sing along to it because I think it's really it is very, very catchy. And then you suddenly go more into it, and because I like to know the words.
Yes,
I've always been like that. And then you break down the words. You go, oh wow. It's really thought-provoking as well.
Yeah.
But it's so good. And it just feels like there's a whole new part of... This is your next chapter.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're looking at... You know, obviously, you've been mentioning chapters and the album was called Chapter. But mm-hmm. it just feels like this is the next bit.
Yeah.
Do you know, this is a really weird thing from talking to you like this. It's something I was going to throw out. Have you ever thought of being a teacher or a lecturer at any of the schools, like going to the Brit School and teaching? Because you... No, I'm being really serious. I think you're a really good teacher.
Really?
I think you have... Yes, I really, really think that. I think you'd be fantastic at a drama school or a... You know, you were at Tring. You go to Tring,
yeah,
didn't you?
Do you know what's really weird that you just said this? You remind me of my first music teacher... That believed in me. She was called Miss Shaw, Louisa Shaw, blonde hair, always wore pink. But no, but genuinely, the way you speak and the way you make me feel, and my mum and I have said, doesn't she remind you of Louisa Shaw? I'm like, yes, she does give that. And then you've just said that. It's so strange. But
you could, but I really think, just think about it, because I can imagine you going off
to
young people.
I think I would love to start going back, and we're talking about it at the moment, because this song for me is about, you know, at the core of it, I was like, I cannot come into this and not do something where at the core of it it's about all my values and my center point of like, okay, where am I going to start? If I'm starting right from the roots of it, what's the first piece of something I want to put out there? This is that, and it's obviously all about my values of who I cherish in my life and what
I need.
You've
got to think of a way that you're on stage that you do it's like, it's not a TED Talk, but
well,
it's
no,
a TED Talk with music
more.
And interact with the audience and Q&A.
Well, that's why I want this whole campaign. I just want to like almost get your standard textbook of what is expected with labels and artists and how we promote records, and there's always this fourth wall, and like completely screw it up, throw it in the bin. And the idea so far has been, you know, I want to rock up at people's local businesses, rock up at...
You've like, done, well, you did that recently.
Yes, I have.
Oh, that was so adorable. Well, for people who don't know what you did... Just explain that if they haven't seen. Oh.
I went to, so there's a guy called Matty, and it's called Matty's Bakery. Check it out, guys. And so he has actually been a day one fan of mine since I was 16. And we're all similar ages, me and my fans. And we've, you know, I'm engaged and I've done what I've done. Some of them are now having kids and babies. Some of them, they're achieving their goals. And I always said to him, because he came to every show, and whenever we saw each other, I'd always say to him, one day when you have your bakery, I promise you I will come to it. And he was like, you promise? I was like, I promise. So I was like, I've got to keep my word. He's opened his bakery and he's doing so, wonderful. So well. So I went through, got the hairnet on, served some people. But and then I was like, bugger it, I'll get outside and sing a song. And it was, you know, very acoustic, very open air on the street. There was the sound of the buses driving past. But I love that. I want to bring it right back to the basics. And I don't mean that by, you know, oh, we need to get all emotional. I just mean, I think there's something about just feeling like we're all human and we can all talk about
you need
things.
To be doing I've got ideas, we'll talk after I've got ideas. You really do spread the joy. You're an utter delight, and I'm very lucky to have interviewed a lot of people in the music industry, and there are a lot of you coming through who actually are making a massive difference. And I love that young people, I love that my daughters think you're fantastic. That's who I want them to. I want them to see somebody like you who's open and honest and kind and writes really good music and performs brilliantly, but is also a real person. So thank you for being on this. I think you're wonderful.